First of all, the shiur that I'm giving today is my father's 20th yahrzeit today. So I decided to give something new because I know that he would appreciate that, and hopefully you'll appreciate it. And something also that I think goes very much in the style of the way that that he would look at things. So I hope that it serves as a source of whatever Aliyah l'neshama may mean. My father, Aliyah l'neshama, was born in Cincinnati, Ohio. He was the oldest of five. His parents came over. They were born in Meisharim, and they came over in 1911 because my grandfather was drafted by the Turks. And my grandfather looked up his old chavrusa, Beryl Manashevitz, who then gave him a job, and one thing led to another, and the family ended up in the kosher food distribution business for like 60, 70 years out of Cincinnati. And so my father went to high school in New York, went to Tor Vidas, and then went to Yeshiva College, and then the Depression came, and he had to come back, and he finished college at UC in Cincinnati because he had help with the business. And then he later went to the seminary. And it was sort of like in those days, like every Jewish family was like every Irish family. Every Irish family has one kid who becomes a priest. So every Jewish family had one kid who became the rabbi. So he became the rabbi head of the family. One rabbi, doctor, lawyer, and two businessmen. It was like, you know, the usual rule. What?
Which seminary?
The Jewish Theological Seminary. So when I went to the Rav Shear, so I went in to talk to the Rav when I was first in the Shear, and he asked me to come in to meet with him and to just get to know him and for him to get to know me. And so I told him, I said, you know, my father was in Rebbe's father's shir. And then he went to the seminary. He said all the American boys then left and went to the seminary. Because the seminary then was essentially all Orthodox kids, all Frum kids. And there were kids who knew a ton. My father's class had 150 applicants. 8 were accepted. And you had to come in knowing half Shas. Right? So, I mean, things have certainly changed. And he said that the YU in those days and for the 20 years afterwards was all Yiddish. Mm-hmm. And there were lots of European boys who came. So the American boys were looking for not only English but also a more academic approach. So that's where they went. So while he was still single, got a job in a small conservative shul in Schenectady, and he was there. And he was introduced to my mother. It's a very long story. And how they met and who introduced him. He's very cute. And they got married, and they lived in Schenectady for a couple of years. And then he had this opportunity in L.A., and he came out right after the war, 1947, to the Valley, which was a real wasteland. And he was there the rest of his life. He had the shul for 31 years, and then he retired and remained connected to the shul. And unfortunately, he had an amazing memory. Unfortunately, about 7-8 years before he passed away, his memory started... you know, when he had this very serious advanced case of Alzheimer's. He is very fondly remembered, and I actually today spoke to several of the old members of his shul just to kind of share some memories, and it was a very sweet time. So, in any way, yes, and thanks for asking. And Yehi Zichro Baruch, his name was Harav Asher Aaron Ben Avram Ben Yomin, and he is buried next to my mom in Eretz Achaim. And he would have been 106.
May I share this with you? My dad's yahrzeit was just Monday.
Oh, okay. And your dad's name?
Spirish Ben Bezalel.
Spirish Ben Bezalel. So we'll dedicate this year to him as well, Bill. Okay?
Thank you, Bill.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so I'm going to start from somewhere which seems totally unrelated to this week's parashah, but we're going to bring it around. If you ask the average person on the street, when do you say Hallel? Right? So what's the answer going to be? The answer, of course, depends on what street it is. Most streets, they're going to say, what the heck is a Hallel? Right? But if you ask the average person who is knowledgeable, somewhat knowledgeable, and you ask them, when do we say Hallel? The first thing that comes out of their mouth is going to be, it's a surprising answer, they're going to say Rosh Chodesh. That's the first thing. I've tried it a million times. First thing everybody says is Rosh Chodesh. Interesting is that the sugya in the main sugya about it, which is in Arachin, on Daf Yod, and you have it in front of you there as the first source, actually says the exact opposite, and I'll explain, but you'll see where we're going here. Demar Rabbi Yochanan Shum Rabbi Shimon ben Yehud Sadak, and you have a translation of part of it underneath. Shmonasa yamim shayachid gomer banat halal. Now the word gomer is a little tricky. Gomer may mean to finish, but it also may mean to read, like gemara, to recite. So there's 18 days in a year when every individual, not just in a community, every individual says halal. Shmonei me'achag, 8 days of Sukkot, all 8 days of Sukkot. Shmonei me'chanukah, all 8 days of Chanukah. Yom tov rishon shel Pesach, first day of Pesach. V'yom tov shel Atzeret. And Shavuot. 8, 8, 1, and 1 is 18. It's simple. Now, uvagola asrim ve'achad, in chutzlach, you have to add 1 to Shavuot, 1 to Pesach, and 1 to Sukkot. You end up with 21. And the mnemonic my father also taught me was bevetach. Bevetach, bet, bet, tet, chet. Right, 2 days of Pesach, 2 days of Shavuot, 9 days of Sukkot, 8 days of Chanukah. Nice way to remember it. Now, the interesting thing that the Gemara immediately observes about Rabbi Yochanan's statement is that we say Hallel every day of Sukkot. We do not say Hallel every day of Pesach. So before you jump at me and throw stuff, you'll notice that Rosh Chodesh is left off the list, and you're going to see why Rosh Chodesh is not on the list. And you'll notice that the rest of Pesach is not on the list. There is an ancient custom that goes back to the 3rd century in Bavel, if not earlier, to say some verses of Hallel on Rosh Chodesh. Right? Not all of it. To say some, skip some. And it's a custom that was observed, meaning noticed, by Rav when he came back to Bavel. And he walked into Shul on Rosh Chodesh and he saw them saying Hallel. He wanted to stop them. It was wrong. And then he saw they were skipping, and he realized, oh, they're doing a minhag of just saying these psukim, which led to a huge machloket rishonim, whether you say bracha on halal on Rosh Chodesh or not. But it's clearly not the real halal. And then the same thing arose as the rest of Pesach, meaning the middle days and end of Pesach, we do the same thing. But essentially, we say halal on the days that are listed here only. And now the Gemara asks the question, which is the focal point of the shir. Maishna b'chag de amrinan kol yoma. Why is it that Sukkot we say Hallel every day? Maishna b'pesach de amrinan kol yoma. And on Pesach we don't say it every day. In other words, Sukkot and Pesach seem to be a symmetrical system. 7 days here, 7 days there, both the 15th and opposite sides of the year. They both commemorate the Exodus. They both special laws about food. Both very heavy on commemorative objects. Everything else, we'd think they're the same. And yet Sukkot, we say halal every day. Pesach, we don't say halal every day. We just say it the first day. Why is that? And the Gemara gives the answer that I put in color coding here. Dechag chalukin bekorbanotehen. On Sukkot, every day has a unique korban. We'll look at the psukim in a minute. But Pesach ain chalukin bekorbanotehen. On Pesach, the korbanot are not any different. Meaning, every day is the same korban as the day before. And if you take a look at the flip the page for a moment, you will see this exemplified out in source 4. It's the Korbanot of Sukkot. And if you look at the Korbanot of Sukkot, you'll see on the first day you bring 13 bulls, second day 12 bulls, etc., and it descends. And the famous, we've talked about in the context of Chanukah and other things, the descending number of bulls that goes from 13 down to 7. On Pesach, on the other hand, you have, and you can see it back on the first page in source 3, the single most popular word in Shul on Pesach, and maybe the most popular word of any Kriyat HaTorah, right? And what is it? We always make a joke, what? Ka'ela. Right? Ka'ela. Right? Everybody in Shul knows, Ka'ela, because what does the Pasuk say? Take a look. There's a whole detail here in Source 3 of the Korban brought on the first day of Pesach, and then it says, in Pasuk Chav Gimel, Milvad Olata Boker, Asher Olata Tamid, Ta'asu Et Eila. So besides the regular daily korban, you're going to do all of these animals, and then Ka'ela Ta'asu Layom, Shivat Yamim, do the same thing every day. Which means that the way the Torah set up the system in our Parsha, Parsha Pinchas, which lists the Tamidin and Musafin, the Korban Tamid and all the Musafin of Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh, Pesach, Matzot, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Shemini Atzeret, all listed out in order. It takes up 2 chapters, Chavchet and Chavtet, of Bamidbar. It takes up the last 3 Aliyot. It's big. And by the way, it's very well known because we read them at all different times of the year as the maftir for all special occasions. The Torah says explicitly there's a korban you bring on the first day of Pesach, and you bring the exact same thing all 7 days. Sukkot, on the other hand, when you see the top page to the back page, every day is unique korban. So the Gemara says Sukkot is a unique korban every day, and Pesach doesn't. So therefore, Pesach, you only say hallel one day. Sukkot, you say hallel every day. So there's two questions arise. One is, what does one have to do with the other? Why does the fact that I bring a unique korban every day of Sukkot mean I have to say hallel every day, and I bring the similar korban on Pesach mean I don't say hallel every day? Right? And the second question is, why is that the case? Why is it that the Torah says bring the same korban every day on Pesach and bring a unique korban every day of Sukkot? So two questions are, of course, related, because we want to get back to hallel and why hallel plays out the way that it does. Parenthetically, and this is totally parenthetic, but just for our interest, if you take a look at underneath the multicolored line in the first source, the Gemara immediately raises every other possible day and says, why don't we say hallel? For instance, Shabbat. On Shabbat, you bring the same korban as the day before? You don't, right? You bring two extra kvasim. So Shabbat l'chalukah b'korban t'alema, why don't you say hallel on Shabbat? The answer is lo ikri moed, some new criterion, which is for a day to be a day of hallel, it has to be called moed. Okay? Rosh Chodesh. Now the Gemara asks, Rosh Chodesh to ikri moed lema. So why don't you say hallel on Rosh Chodesh? It's called a moed. And the answer is lo ikdish basiat malacha. Because Rosh Chodesh, there's no prohibition of doing malacha. So a new criterion, which is, it's got to be a day that has a korban different than the day before. It's got to be a day where it's prohibited malacha and called a moed. So Rosh Chodesh is out because not prohibited malacha. Shabbat's out because not called a moed. All right? And how do we know this?
It's out in what sense?
What?
It's out in what sense?
Out, not in hallel. We don't say hallel.
But Rosh Chodesh.
Right. Don't say hallel in Rosh Chodesh. That's what Gemara says. Right?
Do.
We have a practice of, we have a custom of saying a few verses from hallel. But we don't say hallel, right?
The only thing
the point is that we're not saying hallel. That's the way the Gemara says. The Gemara says quite clearly, we do not say hallel Rosh Chodesh. That's why Rav wanted to stop them. Dichtiv, and now what's the source text for this? Hashir Yalachem Kileli Kadesh Chag, that Yeshayahu gives a prophecy to Chizkiyahu that the day will come when Sancheriv is attacking Yerushalayim, and you're going to be saved, you're going to sing like the holy evening. So what does that mean? So one of the stipulations of Shira is it has to be a day where the night before was sanctified as a day of no malacha. Okay. Then Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, and this I'll summarize outside the text. Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, why don't we say hallel? It fits all the criteria. It's a holy day. It's a moed. It's got a unique korban. Why don't we say hallel? And the Gemara says, quoting Rabbi Avahu, that the Malachim come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, why aren't Bnei Israel saying Shira to you? Why aren't they singing? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers, says, what do you want from them? Imagine a king sitting there with the book of life and the book of death open. You want them to be singing? In other words, Rosh Hashanah Kippur, now we have a new criterion, which is the mood of the day has to be one of festivity. And that's not Rosh Hashanah Kippur, the somber days. Then the Gemara says, what about Hanukkah? Hanukkah, we do say Hallel and don't fit any of these things. It's not a moe, there's no malacha, nothing. Doesn't even have a unique korban. And the answer is that's because of a nace, which means the Gemara right away is saying hallel has two tracks. There's hallel, which we say because of rejoicing, and then it's got this whole series of criteria. And then there's another hallel, another reason we say hallel, which is if it's commemorating a miracle, and that's Chanukah. Then the Gemara goes into the famous question about Purim. Why don't we say hallel on Purim? And that's a whole other separate discussion. The Ramban, in a place I'll tell you about right now, and take a look in source 2, makes the following observation, and this is really just to fine-tune what the Gemara said. As you know, we've talked about this a bunch of times, the Rambam composed an introduction to his Mishneh Torah called Sefer HaMitzvot. In Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam listed the 613 mitzvot, which he believed should be the ones that go on the list. And the Rambam, to defend what was on his list, wrote a 14-paragraph introduction explaining what are the rules for inclusion. Right? What if Hashem told Avram to lech lecha? Is that a mitzvah? Right? What if Hashem says, do all the mitzvot? Is that a mitzvah? Right? Is tefillin one mitzvah or two? All the rules. And in his first paragraph of the 14, he says the first rule is it's got to be from the Torah. Based on the statement in the Gemara, it's got to be a mitzvah from the Torah. Because he's taking aim at the halachot gedolot that included all kosher mitzvot to Rabbanan in his counting. It's got to be from the Torah. And in as an example, he says, how can the Baal HaChod Gedolot count Hallel? Hallel's the Rabbanan. The Ramban comes along in his critique that he wrote 150 years later. It says the following, 100 years later, even less, 50 years later.
Quick question.
Just a second, let's just see the Ramban. And he says the following. He summarizes what the Chazal say. Vanir emi divrehem shumina Torah. He says, I think Hallel's from the Torah. Kamosh v'rashti v'yeh halachal moshe misinai. In other words, there's no explicit pasuk. Maybe. So maybe it's just a tradition from the Torah that we don't have a pasuk for. Oshubichlau ha-simcha. Maybe it's an extension and an expression of simcha shenitztavinu ba. We're commanded to celebrate God through joy. And Hallel might be an expression of that. Kamosh gatuv, yom simchatchem mo'adechem. And what do we see about the chatzotzrot? On your happy days, you're supposed to blast the chatzotzrot. And we have an interesting discussion in Masachat Arachin about whether the singing in the Mikdash was mainly vocal and the instruments are there to accompany it, it's right up your alley, Bill, or whether the main thing was the instruments and the voices that were there to smooth out the sound. And we end up ruling that the main function was the voice. And instruments accompany it?
Yeah, I was going to say the voice wouldn't be there to smooth out the sound.
There we go, good. Just like the Gemara says. Hikar shira b'peh u'klil v'shimei kalahu. He said, so therefore, point being that the Ramban says that the mitzvah of simcha, an expression of that mitzvah is hallel, which means that hallel is a way of rejoicing. Okay, but we still have our two questions. Why would the amount of korbanot brought in a day, whether it's the same or different than the day before, affect our simcha? And why did the Torah mandate that the korbanot on Pesach be monotonous and on Sukkot be variegated? Why would that be? So Jason, you had a question.
Did Rambam know when he was writing that Rambam was so, that they would be paired off?
Of course. The Rambam was, everyone knew the Rambam, even in his life.
I mean, how soon?
I mean, that's way off.
I just was curious. When they were burning the books, was Rambam was still alive for all that?
No.
That was much later.
I was looking at Ramban's wife.
So, yeah. It's also, not to digress, but Hallel, hasn't Hallel been used in addition at individual times, the independence of Hallel, the 67?
Sure.
Were captured.
And that is all modeled after the Gemara here that says Chanukah. In other words, Yom Ha'atzmaut, the 5th of Iyar, or 4th of Iyar, or 3rd of Iyar, or whatever day it is that particular year, because we shift it, Yom Yerushalayim.
Yeah.
These are not days where there's unique korbanot, where there's an isur melacha, etc. So the mainstream approach to mandating or justifying or defending or explaining or however you want to say halal on those days is based on Chanukah, right? Not these others. So now let's try to figure these things out together. First thing is, if you take a look at source 5. Source 5 tells us that we have to celebrate Sukkot. We know how to celebrate Sukkot. We also have to live in Sukkot. Why do we have to live in Sukkot? So in the red print, Kivas Sukkot Oshavti Bnei Yisrael Motzi Otam Eretz Yisrael. In other words, what are we commanded to do? We're commanded to build a commemoration of how we left. What it means, whether it means the town of Sukkot right next to Ramses, or the town of Sukkot, like Rabbi Yehuda Chassid says in Jordan, or whether it means Sukkot where the clouds, or whether it's Sukkot or huts, whatever it may mean, it refers to some sort of a protection that God gave us or God enabled us to have while we were on the road from Egypt. Whatever it may mean, right? And the commentaries on that are wide and variegated. But in the meantime, it's to commemorate that. Okay.
Would you think that a better commemoration would have been tents? Did they live in tents?
So evidently, they certainly did live in tents, after all, Matu Olacha Yaakov. So that is probably part of what leads to us saying Sukkot doesn't mean huts, right? Because tents make a lot more sense. So it may have meant the clouds, it may have meant a town called Sukkot, may have meant one of a number of things. On the other hand, the Torah says the following thing about Pesach, and it's kind of interesting. The first Pesach, meaning the year we left Egypt, how long was Yontif? How long was Yom Tov?
In the first day.
What?
First day.
It was half a day, right? It was a day. That was it.
Well, how about
Pesach, the first year, when they left? They left the next day. And how long was their prohibition of chametz? That day. That's it. It was a one-day thing. And yet we're told in source 6 that we have to commemorate it for 7 days. Why? Why? So I'm going to give you one small approach now that hopefully we can tie everything together. God took us out of Mitzrayim. We traveled through the Midbar, and although we are fond, because we love to critique ourselves, especially not our actual selves, but ancestors and anybody else who's related to us, we're fond of looking at that generation as being complainers and trouble and rabble, etc. The reality is that we did a pretty good job. And we had to deal with two very different and very opposite challenges of the road. What is the challenge of the road? Imagine a very long trip through a very hot desert. You're taking 70, right? So you take the 10 to the 15, up to the 70, and you take the 70 all the way to Washington, D.C. All right? What's the challenge?
Gas.
What are the challenges? Okay, keep going. Gas,
water.
What else?
Water.
Water, what else?
Food.
Okay.
Shelter.
Good. So one problem is, and especially if, like us, we have very severe dietary restrictions, is we might have access to a lot of food. These days, you can find OU stuff anywhere in the country. But what is it you're finding? Same 10 boring things.
Oh, yeah.
That's about all you got.
Kit-Kat.
Right? In other words, there's no shallots, there's no milts, there's no mamila, there's none of these nice restaurants in the middle of Nebraska.
No, but you can buy shallots anywhere.
But you're on the road, on the road, on the road, on the road. You can't get this. So on the road, you're dealing with the boredom of sameness. And by the way, although this is a gorgeous country and a very big country, if you're going on the roads that I just mentioned, there are long stretches that are very boring. That's part one. Part two is a very different thing, which is you're dealing with monotony and boredom. On the other hand, you have very much the opposite challenge.
Half the fun is getting there.
Which is,
the journey is
but you have the opposite challenge. And the opposite challenge is you don't know what's around the turn. You don't know what's coming up. First of all, driving across this country any time of the year, the weather can just in a minute turn on you. And suddenly you can find that there is a jackknife big rig on the road. There's all sorts of things that could be there. You could come and find what?
Woman and her boyfriend were killed.
And you could end up finding a place where suddenly there's no motel, and for the next 30 miles no motel, and finally you get there and you're absolutely exhausted, and it's no vacancy, and you got to keep going. Which means you have two opposite challenges on the road. One challenge is the challenge of monotony. And the other is the challenge of the unknown, which is the opposite of monotony. So when you're dealing with monotony, the unknown's kind of fun. Like, you know, your parents, if you're a little kid and your parents have put together a meal, and you get, a surprise meal, very nice. But when you're the parents, you don't have that. So the unknown is scary. Where are we going to get water from? Where are we going to get gas from? And on the other hand, how are we going to deal with the same thing over and over? Now, by the way, when you're driving across country, you could do it in 3 days. So they do it in 5 days. All right? Asma, we're talking now about 3 days or 5 days. We're talking about years. So the Torah says, we want you to commemorate and remember this experience. Yitziat Mitzrayim. On both poles. One pole, the pole of the sameness. And the fact that you came through with flying colors and you have everything to celebrate and to rejoice over the fact that you dealt with that sameness, that monotony well. Take a look, please, at Source 7. In Parshat Ekev, the Torah says, Kol mitzvah shonachim etzavcha yom tishmurun lasot naman tichyun uvitem v'atem rishtem et ha'aretz shenishba adonai lavoteichem. Keep the mitzvot and you're going to come to the land and inherit it. V'zacharta et kol haderach. You must remember the entire road. That God walked you through for 40 years. He tested you. What was the test? To see if you're going to keep the mitzvot. And watch what he did. He oppressed you and made you hungry, and he fed you the man that you never knew. To let you know that man doesn't live by bread alone, he lives by everything that God gives him. But the point being is that part of the challenge was the man. How is the man a challenge? Because it's boring. It's the same thing every day. It's like you have this it's endless supply, and I don't care if it's Kit Kat.
You can imagine the man is anything you wanted.
Maybe. Doesn't seem like that, because the way B'nai Yisrael respond to it is, we're tired of this stuff. It's the same thing every day. It's boring, and we're dealing with boredom. And God says, I want you to remember that path. So how does God tell you to remember that path? God says, once a year, for 7 days, which is enough to do some remembering and commemorating, I want you to remember that sameness. By the way, what do we eat for those 7 days? Matzah, road food. What do we avoid? Settled food, the kind of stuff you get in a restaurant, fancy stuff. We eat road food for 7 days. We're supposed to commemorate this boredom, this sameness every day.
So what does
the Torah do? The Torah says, bring a korban on the first day, and then same korban every day. This is the holiday where you're celebrating your victory over boredom. Think about it experientially. Where is the high moment of Pesach? Where's the high moment of Pesach?
When you got out.
Where's the high moment of Pesach in every year? Where is it? It's at the Seder. Everything leads to the Seder. Very great excitement in the Seder. If we're stuck here in Chutzlar, it's the second Seder, Mela. And then, what's the rest of the week? A trip here and a trip there and visit with these one. And it peters out. The days peter out. Think about now Sukkot. What's the challenge of Sukkot? The challenge of Sukkot is the challenge of the unknown. Challenge of the elements, the challenge of I don't know what's around the next corner. I don't know where I'm going to get my water from. What's Sukkot all about? Sukkot is all about water. Chazal tell us that on Pesach we're judged for the grains, and on Sukkot for the water. Where's the water going to come from? I don't know. I'm putting all of my faith in God's hands. What are my future in God's hands? And I'm trusting God.
You mean the water for the coming season?
Yeah. And the water for the road. If I'm traveling through the desert, where's my next oasis? I don't know. And so our victory over the fear of the unknown.
What about Miriam's well and all that?
Simple read of the text. They go from oasis to oasis. Right? And occasional rocks that, you know, right? So we're dealing with two big challenges which are exactly opposite challenges. So what does the Torah tell us to do in Sukkot? Every day celebrate a new celebration. Because every day was a new challenge. And so therefore every day is a different korban. Since every day is a different korban, the Gemara says, must be that every day is a unique celebration, and therefore every day you say halal. Because it's a unique celebration. Pesach, on the other hand, is one victory over boredom, over monotony, and therefore it's one single korban, one single day of halal that carries through. And you think about it experientially. Sukkot, when's the high of Sukkot? Shmini Atzeret. The biggest, most fantastic day of Sukkot's the end. The biggest, most fantastic day of Pesach is the beginning. Sukkot builds up. Pesach peters out. And so the Gemara simply puts the two together and says, if on Pesach each day is the same korban, that means it's one long stretch, one halal. If on Sukkot each day was a unique korban, that means each day has its own sanctity, each day has its own challenges that we met, and they were successful over. And therefore, each day of Sukkot is a unique piece, and each day has its own challah.